is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, May 10th, 2024, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in Montana. I'll be flying to New York for this weekend's Sunday night game between the New York Mets and the Atlanta Braves. And Taylor Schwenk is actually working from ESPN today. Taylor, how you doing?
Doing well. We're in Studio T over here. That's what I've called this. It's a huddle room that I've taken over here on Thursdays when I come to the office.
So do you know why May 10th is especially a big day in farm country?
Nah, I can't think of anything.
So it's traditionally the day, and maybe as climate has changed, it traditionally has been a day when cows have been let out into pasture. Okay. And, you know, they've been in the barn all winter and they're all cooped up, and then you let them out into the fields, and man, you talk about happy creatures. Like, yeah, they're running around. You got these old cows who are 8 years old. They're sprinting around. They've got the zoomies. It's a lot of fun. But May 10th is that day, which is today. And that's kind of what's happening with Paul Skeens, right?
Oh,
he called up to the big leagues the first time. What do you think?
Oh, man, let that kid loose. He's going to be live when he gets out there on the mound. Very excited for this debut here. And I loved how you weaved all that together, Buster.
Well, you know, I'm a professional. I've told you that my fantasy team that I do with my son, Jake, it's very much of a Jerry Jones, Jimmy Johnson relationship. We're arguing back and forth. And for the last 3 weeks, he's been like, why are we carrying Paul Skeens on our roster? What are we doing here? And I'm like, just be patient. Just be patient. Keep the guy on the roster. No, he's going to get called up at some point. How are we looking today, Taylor?
Looking pretty good, Buster. Do you need Jake to call me and for me to tell him, like, hey, listen to your old man. He knows some things. He's lived some life. Yeah, you know, not just in the fantasy baseball realm either, Buster. I could drop some wisdom on him.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I need backing, because as any parent knows, their kids think they're a complete idiot. So my son, I'm hoping Paul Skeens does well in his first start, because then I got some bragging rights with Jake for sure. But that'll be fun. Him pitching against the Chicago Cubs on the road for his major league debut on Saturday. Now, every Friday we do our top five and our bottom three. Three is easy at this point. All right. You know, the White Sox are terrible. They're at number 30. I've got the Marlins at 29. Maybe you could make an argument the Marlins should drop to 30 for this week after trading Luis Arraez. And then you have the Colorado Rockies. Top five for me, and I'm going to be talking about this with Eduardo Perez coming up. I've got Phillies at number one. After seeing them last weekend, I'm so impressed by them. They've got the best record in baseball. I've got the Dodgers 2, the Braves 3, the Orioles 4, the Yankees at 5. It's a little different than our friend Jesse Rogers, who had the Cubs at number 3 in his power rankings on Sunday night, Taylor.
We didn't talk about this, but my jaw was on the floor. I mean, I love Jesse, but he is a Chicago guy. He was drinking right out of Lake Michigan with that take. I don't really agree with that one. I feel like you could say they're top 10, but top 5, top 3? That's crazy, Jesse.
Yeah, what do you think of the what do you think of my top 5?
I like your top 5. I think, and we're going to hear a little bit of this from Eduardo. I don't know about the Braves. I feel like maybe you could flop the Braves and the Orioles, but yeah, I like it. I like your top 5.
Okay. Yeah, I really walked away from watching the Phillies saying that right now is the team to beat. But, you know, well, Eduardo's got a different perspective, I'm sure, about that. The Ones Who Get It Done is brought to you by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call Grainger.com or just stop by. All right, the top series coming up this weekend. We got the Yankees at the Rays. The Diamondbacks are playing Taylor's Orioles. The Minnesota Twins, who, of course, have been surging in recent weeks, they're facing the Blue Jays, who kind of feel like they're right on the edge. There was a big team meeting that they had before their game on Wednesday. Dodgers at the Padres. And then, of course, the Braves and the Mets playing on Sunday Night Baseball. It looks like we've got Bryce Elder pitching on Sunday against Luis Severino. Shohei Ohtani's ex-interpreter has pled guilty to bank and tax fraud. Ipe Mizuhara agreed to plead guilty to federal charges of felony bank fraud and submitting a false tax return after authorities found that he stole nearly $17 million from Ohtani to pay off gambling debts to an illegal sports book. If you read the stories, it sounds like the plea agreement may end with Mitsuhara serving somewhere between 8 and 10 years in prison if the plea agreement goes through. Giancarlo Stanton had the hardest hit home run of the season against the Astros on Wednesday, 119.9 miles per hour. Here's what it sounded like.
Drill deep to left field. Fair, it's gone. Oh, it's gone. See ya. Into the second deck. 5-1 Yanks.
You know, Michael, I think we might have just broke a record. That was over 120 miles an hour off the bat. Thank goodness I wasn't talking tonight because that got out of here quick.
Some other notes. The Reds' Christian Encarnacion Strand went to the injured list with a broken wrist. Man, they've had some bad luck with injuries. He's expected to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Jorge Soler was placed on the 10-day injured list with a right shoulder strain. And the Texas Rangers brought back Robbie Grossman in a trade with the Chicago White Sox. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, Low Post, Hoop Collective, we're banging the drum here. NBA playoffs marching along. The Knicks get another win last night. How do you feel about, you know, we deal with Yankees fans a lot, and, you know, you lived in New York, this, like, Knicks revival that's going on right now, does that make you feel anything?
I think anything? It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it absolutely resonates. I mean, I don't think there's any more fun than having the Knicks be great for the NBA. You know,
yeah,
doesn't mean that, you know, they're championship caliber, man. Knicks fans live and die with that team. I mean, think about how they basically filled that arena, even when the team has stunk for a lot of years.
Playoff basketball in Madison Square Garden is the absolute coolest. Like, I don't care if you hate the Knicks, like, it's awesome. It trounces TD Garden. Forget it. I don't want to hear it, Boston fans. That's the best right there.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Eduardo Perez is an analyst on Sunday Night Baseball. And this Sunday, he, me, Carl, David Cohn will all be in Flushing because we've got the Atlanta Braves and the New York Mets. Eduardo, how you doing this week?
I'm doing real well, Buster. Doing real well. Just taking it all in. Loving to be on with you.
Nice. Before we get started talking about the Braves and Mets, I do want to talk to you about the biggest story in baseball, which is the promotion of Paul Skeens to start Saturday for the Pittsburgh Pirates against the Chicago Cubs. What do you think, and what do you think his impact is going to be?
I think it's going to be big. Look, they've limited his amount of pitching right to 75 pitches per game, but he's been very economical. He hits the strike zone real well. He's got a splitter and a fastball that works and plays up at any level. We saw it at the College World Series. We saw it during the season last year as well after he had signed. We've seen it this year as well. And finally, we haven't had a moment like this, I want to say, since probably Strasburg.
Right.
And remember the frenzy about that. The secondary market, I checked it out this morning. Same seat. A ticket behind the plate, secondary market, will cost you $46. That same seat is going for over $240 right now.
Wow.
So there's the real effect to all of this. Plus, we all know that the Chicago Cubs fans travel, and the Pittsburgh Pirate fans, they could be showing up in droves for this one.
Oh, especially with, you know, this guy who, you know, the comparisons are off the charts about what he might be. I'm going to throw that back at you when you mentioned Steven Strasburg, who I remember the late, great Kevin Towers telling me when he saw him in college, the greatest pitching prospect that he's ever seen. Strasburg did not disappoint. He was dominant from his first game in the big league, struck out 14 guys. Who do you think is better at this stage in their respective careers? Strasburg when he broke in, or what we see with Skeens now?
I think what we're going to see with Skeens. I think
mechanically,
look, Strasburg was dynamic that day. He did not disappoint his first game. It was beautiful to watch. It was a great experience. The environment at Nationals Park was great, but there were flaws. The inverted W at the time, ball facing down, for those of you fans that don't know about that, when he delivered, you want to have the ball facing up, and Paul Skeens does that, and he has the ability to hit 100 consistently. He has the ability of being able to pinpoint and dot those pitches, and I think it's a fresher arm because it has not been exposed as much as Stevens was through his childhood leading up to San Diego State before getting to the big leagues.
That's right, because he was a converted catcher. He hasn't been pitching for all that long. He's not going to have as much mileage. So that'll be the game we'll be watching on Saturday. And on Sunday, we've got the Cubs, we've got the Mets, and we've had the Atlanta Braves in Citi Field, as I mentioned. The Braves are interesting because they're 22-12. Like, they're off to a great start. They're again on, you know, a pace to win 100 games. And yet this incredible offense of last year when they led the majors in homers, Eduardo, as of this morning, you and I talking, they're 18th out of the 30 teams in home runs with 36. They're 12th in runs scored with 172. Do you take that as a good sign or a bad sign for the Atlanta Braves?
I mean, you look at the record, right? And you're saying this team should be playing better. They've got 22 wins right now, 22-12. And
right,
they haven't had their main guys at the top of the order get it going. Olsen, Riley, Acuna, no particular order, have been not meeting the expectations that we're used to seeing from what we saw last year. We saw a team that scored early and often in the first inning. We saw a team that could hit the ball out of the ballpark. But now, take into account that you have probably, I have to say, the second best DH in baseball that's leading the league in home runs and in RBI, because I still have Otani ahead of him, but Marcelo Zuna has been fantastic. He's leading the league in RBI, and those guys have not been getting on in front of him at a high rate. Just imagine if they were. Just imagine if they were productive just with their on-base percentage. Where would he be right now when it comes to RBI? So, yes, they've had other guys take over. Zuna last year started terribly. As a matter of fact, he got benched. And then the second half of the season, he went off, and he hasn't stopped hitting since. He's in a great place. Had a conversation with him about it as well, where his focus is a lot better and he's matured a lot more. There's no way that I think that Acuna is a 26% strikeout rate guy. Last year he was at 11%. That's going to level out. And once it does, once he starts not chasing out of the zone, he starts walking more, letting the game come to him, I think we're going to see a more productive Acuna, because we've already seen it before. He's done it. And I'm no doubt that Riley and Olsen are going to be the same.
The last time we had the Braves on Sunday Night Baseball a few weeks ago, Kevin Seitzer, their hitting coach, Austin Riley, and others were telling me, Acuna's right there. He's right there. He's ready to take off. He didn't. Tell me why you think that he has struggled early this season.
I think he's trying to replicate what he did last year. And when you're chasing greatness, and that's what it was last year, and you don't feel it, I think it hurts. And look, when he came into the season last year, he had gone to the Dominican Republic. He worked out in the Dominican, or he worked out in Venezuela, in the Dominican Republic. He was on a mission. I'm wondering, and I can't wait to get to the ballpark on Sunday, on Mother's Day, and ask him, what was your routine this year? Were there more distractions this year because he was the MVP? Were there more distractions? Did he have to, did it take him out of his norm? He had to go to a lot of presentations. The focus wasn't there. Offseason is big for a lot of players. It sets the tone for that season. And to me, I'm wondering if that plus, remember at the end of spring training, we were now thinking, is he going to be on the IL or not? Is his knee 100%? He has 14 stolen bases, but is it affecting him at all at the plate? All those things are big time questions that have to be asked about Ronald Acuña Jr.
Now, you said something in the podcast, which I think is completely insane. After we saw the Phillies last weekend, we were having the conversation about which team is better, Phillies or Braves. And in this moment, I feel like there's no question in my mind the Phillies are the better team. You disagreed.
I disagreed. And a lot of people call me crazy. And I love the Phillies team. I think they're a very talented team. But are they this good? Are they 100 and... they're averaging right now to be a 113 game winning team. Are they that? My answer is no. And the reason I say this is because no team in baseball has played more games against sub 500 teams than the Philadelphia Phillies. They are 20-9 against sub 500 teams. I mean, the team that's second on that list right now is the New York Yankees at 15-7. Against 500 teams. They have not played. They played 29 games against that. And then teams above 500, they've only played 9 games. They're 6-3. And oh, by the way, one of the teams is the Washington Nationals. So you have to take both into perspective of the Atlanta Braves, who have really had to go against a tougher schedule. They're 12-2. They've only played 14 games against sub 500 teams. When that comes around to them, I expect the Braves all of a sudden to hit on all cylinders.
Okay. And of course, they've got Chris Sale, who's pitching great yesterday through 37 sliders. Note from Paul Hembekides, 18 of which were induced a swing, 13 of which were whiffs. That was Chris Sale pitching against his former team, the Red Sox, on Wednesday. He's been outstanding. Where do you see the Mets right now in terms of competing this year, not competing, Eduardo?
Yeah, look, I still think Mendoza has done a really nice job, especially after starting season 0-5. And there was a little panic in New York. What's going on? Lindor wasn't hitting at the beginning of the season. Nimmo wasn't hitting at the beginning of the season. McNeil, the same thing, was not hitting. Then little by little, they started finding their groove. And then Pete Alonso lost his groove. Once these guys have to play almost, they have to meet expectations and exceed expectations. They lost, a big piece in Alvarez behind the plate. Tomas Nito is a very good game caller. Pitchers trust him. I've seen that pitchers have actually gotten a little bit better with Narvaez and Nito behind the plate. But this has to be led by their superstars. And Alfonso and Lindor and Nimmo have to be excellent on a daily basis for them to have an opportunity. JD Martinez is going to add to it, but I think he's still a month off. I don't believe his swing is still there. Going through an abbreviated late spring training for him. So I expect a good second half from JD, but those other three guys have to carry it early.
All right, late in Kansas City's game against Milwaukee on Wednesday, this is what it sounded like. Bobby Witt Jr. at the plate.
Witt has scored two of the three runs. Doubled and scored in the first, walked, and now he launches a high drive deep left field to the wall and gone, Bobby Witt. It has been a while since Bobby Witt launched a home run. So, a big insurance run, 4-2 Royals.
That's Danny Matthews, 610 KCSP. Bobby Witt Jr. now, Eduardo, is on a pace for 153 runs for this season, 47 doubles, 21 triples, 21 homers, over 50 stolen bases. Juan Soto's batting .338, 9 homers, 33 RBI, OPS of 1,023. I don't think there's any doubt these two at the moment would be your early front runners for American League MVP. Who you got?
I got Juan Soto right now. But let me tell you something. Bobby Witt Jr. is not going anywhere. He's going to be right there. And the Kansas City Royals have played great baseball. They played great baseball with Salvador Perez still doing what he's doing at his age behind the plate. Elite numbers. You have Bobby Witt Jr., who's exciting on both ends, not only on the defense, not only with the bat, but also base running. His baseball IQ is off the charts. I'm glad that the Kansas City Royals committed to a player like that. They needed it, and they needed to get off to a really great start, and they've done so. I think a lot has to do with their pitching, veteran pitching. Seth Lugo has been great. He's been able to go out there, take the ball, his last outing, 7-plus innings of work, and continuing to at least keep his team in it. They have some really good arms in the back end.
Eduardo, when we get into these discussions about, MVP, and you have a small market player against a big market player, there's no question that the big market player gets more exposure. But I do wonder if it sometimes works to the benefit of the small market player, because Juan Soto is surrounded by Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and Anthony Volpe, and he's a deeper team where you have, and you're right, Salvador Perez off to a great start, but Bobby Witt Jr. has the advantage of being the one guy. You know, Aaron Judge is getting hotter. I do wonder if when you look at the voting at the end of the year, that might play into to some advantage for Bobby Witt Jr.
It could play to some advantage, but the reality is, if you do it in New York, you can do it anywhere, right? As the song says, make it here, you make it anywhere. And that's exactly what New York is all about. And Juan Soto, early in this year, they started the season off against the Houston Astros. They are done playing the Houston Astros already. And he created damage against one of their biggest nemesis in baseball for the last few years, the Astros. And I think the Astros are happy that they don't have to deal with Juan Soto for the foreseeable future this year. But at the same time, they are he's a game changer. He's a game changer in that lineup. And, you know, you're able to mix in the righty, lefty-righty. Volpe's been great in the leadoff spot. You get Soto, then you get Judge, and you mentioned it. Judge is starting to get out of this thing. He went 1-for-3 2 days ago. Yesterday, he goes 3-for-5 with 3 runs driven in, and he drives the ball 2 out of 3 times to right center field with authority, 1 for a home run, 1 for a double. This guy is about to be, I'm telling you right now, it's going to be the best version of Judge. We're going to see it from here on out because he's figured it out.
All right, Eduardo, thanks for doing this. I will see you in New York.
I'll see you, hopefully, for the clown car.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com, and also someone who's digging out numbers throughout Sunday Night Baseball. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm going to throw a question at you right off the bat with zero preparation, which is always fun. If you had a ballot today, who is your American League MVP? Is it Juan Soto or is it Bobby Witt Jr.? I ticked off for Eduardo, Bobby Witt Jr. on a pace for 153 runs, for 47 doubles, for 21 triples, for 21 home runs. Eduardo, I think, reflexively said Juan Soto because we talked about him. I think Bobby Witt Jr. would win the vote as of today because he's a shortstop. Who you got?
I mean, he has a great case. He got off to a great start, you know, maybe sputtered barely for maybe a few games, and now back to being just as good as he was early in the year. But I think it has to be. So we're doing this in a contract year, in this first year in New York. Everything is doing. And you think about, I mean, both of these teams are in great spots because of those individual players. When you look at that Yankee offense, the start Aaron Judge got off to, though he's playing much better lately, and you think of everything else, where would the Yankees be right now if not for Juan Soto? My man, is a great question. And how much fun is that? This two guys are under the age of 26, and those are top two for AL MVP right now.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think it's there's a gap. I think those two are at 1 and 2 in whatever arrangement you want to have. And then I think there's a gap, and maybe Aaron Judge closes it. Jose Ramirez always seems to find his way into the conversation, but those two guys are right far and away 1 and 2 now. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 119.9. So speaking of one of Soto's teammates, Giancarlo Stanton, on Wednesday, hit the 119.9 mile an hour home run, which, of course, if you know anything about him, that is only his third hardest hit home run under Statcast, which is just incredible. There have been 12 home runs at least 119 miles an hour since 2015, if we include the playoffs. He has 6 of them, and everyone else in baseball has 6 of them. It's just amazing what he has done. And of course, it wasn't just 119.9 on Wednesday. He had 118.8 mile an hour home run on Tuesday. So he became the second guy under Statcast with a 118 plus mile an hour home run in a single calendar month. And the other guy to do it also did it on back-to-back days. And of course, it was Aaron Judge in June of 2017 on the 10th and the 11th. So it was incredible, incredible stuff. And exactly what the Yankees need from Giancarlo Stanton to help that offense going beyond Juan Soto.
Number two
is Wongo with 1.08. So Shota Imanaga Dere, 1.08 through 7 career starts, and potentially, if not for some bullpen issues for the Cubs lately, might have been even lower. He ended up giving up that home run in his final inning work in his most recent start when he started the inning already at 95 pitches. You wonder if the Cubs bullpen had been a bit more solid if he even would have started that inning. But anyway, 1.08 and just 5 walks in his first 7 career starts. No other pitcher has had an ERA that long and that few walks in his first 7 career starts since earned runs became official in both leagues, which goes back to 1913. And if we take those numbers, we say a sub 1.15 ERA and 5 or fewer walks in any single season, 7 turns, man. The only other Cubs do that other than Imanaga, who of course had done so to start his career, Jake Arrieta in 2015, of course, Warren Hacker in 1952, and Grover Alexander in 1920. He's just off to a spectacular start. It's really, really cool to think about that Jake Arrieta this season and the fact that Imanaga is starting his career just as well as that, too.
Number one
is 225. So this is just one of those quirky things I've been keeping an eye on. Each of the last 5 games the Dodgers have played has been 2 hours and 24 minutes or shorter. It's the first time they played 5 straight games at 225 or shorter, since having 2 separate streaks of that in 1980. Last time they had a longer streak was when they played 6 straight games that short in July of 1977. And their game on Wednesday was just an hour and 55 minutes. It was their shortest 9-inning game since May 4th, 2003 against the Pirates, also 155. And of course, the Dodger leadoff hitter in that game was none other than Dave Roberts, now the manager. I mean, we've seen past games, of course, this is what has been happening with the pitch time. I think it's pretty cool. You think about all the really good pitching that the Dodgers have had over the last, 40 plus years. they've not played games this fast and that long. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, you know, how fast they're moving along, too. And you wouldn't think that normally because of how their offense is, right? It's a very patient offense. So one last question for you before you go. I talked about this with Eduardo. I walked away from watching the Phillies last week and saying they're the best team in baseball right now. And Eduardo disagrees with me. He says the Atlanta Braves. You get to be the tiebreaker. And if you want, you can throw the Dodgers into it. Who's the number one team in baseball right now? Right now. And I'm not holding you to, you know, picking a World Series winner, but how they are right now, who would you pick?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's really, really tough. By the way, I want to bring the Orioles into the discussion.
Wow, okay.
I know they have a closer issue right now. We've seen that on display. But I think they should be in the discussion as well. I mean, I heard Eduardo going back and forth on this during our Sunday night baseball meeting earlier this morning on Thursday. And I think he makes a great point that they're not even at their strength. They play a tougher team. I really, truly have no idea on this moment, but I can't wait for them all to face off in the playoffs. I mean, I think even in the regular season, seeing how the Phillies and Braves play each other will tell us a lot about what to expect moving forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's part of me that wants to fast forward to the playoffs because that the Dodger-Philly-Braves situation is going to be so fascinating. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, ToddRadom.com. Todd, how you doing this week?
Good, Buster. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Right in this cough. Before we get started, you mentioned that you got some baseball cards, and one of them is coincidentally someone we know well.
Yes, I'm holding it in my hand right now. I was gifted a box of baseball cards, and at the top of the pile, basically, a 2023 Topps Allen and Ginter card of our friend and colleague Sarah Langs. So how cool is that?
Yeah, very cool. I think we know where you can get that personalized if you want, Todd, if that interests you.
It does interest me, and I'm going to take you up on that.
All right. So we did get an interesting Bleacher Tweet question this week, and we talked about it on the podcast that came out on Wednesday. Tim O'Brien in Ballmer writes, is there not the strongest chance that Todd Radom, he of infinite travels and contacts, actually works for a certain unnamed clandestine government agency? And I thought, You know, I've known Todd for so long, and I think that's a possibility. I'd say you.
I'm not at liberty to say. That's got to be the answer,
you,
right?
You do know everyone, and I know you've had contact with former presidents, so I'm now beginning to wonder, I'm putting it all together, Todd.
It could very well be, Buster, but, you know, as the saying goes, if I told you I'd have to kill you, I would never do such a thing.
Oh, my. That's true. I forget. And you're in your work, you can't necessarily go out and take credit for it. So everything is sort of under wraps with you, you know?
Origin of the Hail to the Chief thing, which goes back so long that we
now
kind of forget
about it. Coming full circle.
Right.
Now it's all coming full circle. All right. Let's get to this week's Ballpark and Beyond.
All right, Buster, today we are going to take the Long Island Railroad to Babylon, New York. We will exit the train and walk a couple of blocks west to Railroad Avenue and Argyle Park. Walk along the lake there, and at the far western end of it, we will come to a stone monument with a plaque which commemorates the birthplace of the Cuban Giants, the first African-American professional baseball team. They were founded here in 1885 when the Argyle Hotel stood on the site. The hotel was constructed by August Belmont and financed by Long Island Railroad President Austin Corbin. It opened in 1882, and it catered to wealthy summer visitors from nearby New York. It contained 350 rooms, and the hotel was staffed by Black service workers who, along with players from several other Black baseball teams, formed the core of a ball club that they initially called the Babylon Black Panthers. Organized by head waiter Frank P. Thompson, the team began play in August 1885. They took on all comers, including their first major league opponents, the American Association's New York Metropolitans, on October 5th of that year. This team was good, and they attracted attention. They traveled south that first winter, playing their way through the region on their way to Florida, where they took on employment waiting tables at the Hotel Ponce de Leon in St. Augustine. They then traveled back up north, where they reportedly won 40 straight games. The club soon gained the backing of a white businessman from Trenton, New Jersey, named Walter Cook. That season, Cook paid his players. Pitchers and catchers reportedly got $18 a week plus expenses. Infielders got $15 and outfielders $12. Cook changed the team's name to Cuban Giants. There were no Cubans on the team, Buster, but a few players did play there prior to the team's formation. We can surmise that the name was either a protective or promotional device of sorts, a counteraction to hostile white American audiences, or perhaps a tool to appeal to a broader audience. Whatever the case, the team played all year round, including in Cuba, where they were incredibly popular, drawing huge crowds of enthusiastic fans. In July 1886, the Cuban Giants defeated two major league clubs, the American Association's Cincinnati Red Stockings and the National League's Kansas City Cowboys. The Cuban Giants, by now based in Trenton, were crowned, quote, world colored champions of 1887 and 1888. They shifted operations to York, Pennsylvania in 1890, eventually fractured and finally disbanded in 1915. As for the Argyle Hotel, it began to fall out of favor and was torn down in 1904, replaced by a series of 20 cottages. Go to the park that occupies part of the site today and think about the Cuban Giants, the first Black pro club who were founded there 140 years ago. It's this week's stop on our season-long journey to the ballpark and beyond.
Man, that is outstanding. Thank you for that great history lesson every week. It's been just absolutely fantastic. I'd say this, too. It maybe was the first example of analytics, right, where he's paying his pitchers and catchers $18 a week plus expenses. The infielder's $15, and the outfielder's getting just $12.
Yeah, and they had some. There was no salary cap, I imagine.
Right, exactly.
But pretty interesting. And I will say this, part of the research into this segment that we're going to be talking about all season long involves looking at Street View on Google Maps, and you could literally trace your footsteps, and it's fascinating to see what is there now and to see how things are commemorated, if they are commemorated at all. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. I love this. And the, you know, the pictures that you've sent along also to attach some of these entries, it's fascinating. So thank you for the work that you put in on this. And every year you put in so much work on this. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, week six, guys. So here we go. What are the Kansas City Royals named for? Is it A, Negro Leagues team that Jackie Robinson played for? Is it B, the nickname of founding owner Ewing Kaufman? Is it C, a nod to Kansas City's Hallmark Corporation? Or is it D, the American Royal Livestock Show? What are the Kansas City Royals named for? The Negro Leagues team that Jackie Robinson played for? The nickname for founding owner Ewing Kaufman? A nod to Casey's Hallmark Corp? Or the American Royal Livestock Show?
Taylor, what you got?
All of those sound extremely plausible. I think I'll go with the nickname of the owner.
I'm going to go with D, Todd.
Buster is correct. Buster is correct. Yeah. Because Buster knows about livestock more than Taylor.
That's right. If you get a cow question, it's an inherent advantage for me.
The Kansas City Royals are named for the American Royal Livestock Show. Pretty amazing stuff.
I love that. Taylor?
And not, Todd, you don't know this, but we recorded the opening of the show, and Buster, tell Todd why May 10th is such a special day for farmers.
Can you guess why May 10th is a special day, Todd?
Is it the beginning of mud season in Vermont, Buster? I have no idea.
It's something along those lines. May 10th is the day that traditionally cows are let out to pasture. And yes, and so if you can imagine, you have all these cows, you know, you got a herd of cows, you know, we had 50 milking cows.
I can imagine.
And you let them outside, and you talk about cows going crazy. Like, they are running around, they got the zoomies, you got old cows, 8, 9 years old, who are just running and leaping. And that was my way of introducing the fact that Paul Skeens has been called up to the big leagues.
Is there some kind of ceremony that accompanies all of this bovine chaos, Buster?
It is. Yeah, I don't know if those dates, because my sister told me that the farm that I grew up on, cows were put out to pasture a week ago, okay? But when we were growing up, May 10th was like a special day, and it was known that way. Yeah, and we let them out. And it was a big deal. We all wanted to see it, to see the enthusiasm of the cows going out into the pasture for the first time after being cooped up all winter.
Bovine Chaos. It could be a band name. And I will say this, it seems like it needs a commemorative logo.
Oh my gosh. Todd, if you did one of those, you might become a legend in Vermont.
Oh, well, that's part of my secret government thing that our listener tweeted in about. Asked you a question.
Very nice. All right. Thanks for doing this, Todd, as always, around your really busy schedule.
I appreciate you being flexible. Thank you.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. Bleacher Tweets are brought to you by DirecTV. Get the best of live sports and streaming together. No satellite dish required. Now stream DirecTV satellite free. You can call the program on the Bleacher Tweets voicemail line at 406-404-8460. You can email the show, bleachertweets@gmail.com. You can reach out on the application formerly known as Twitter, #BleacherTweets. All of that is in the show notes there. Let's go to the voicemail line.
Hi, Buster. This is Danny Norlander in upstate New York. I'm calling with a question about the Braves. They're doing fine right now. Their record is pretty good, but they did just get swept by the Dodgers, and they're now in second to the Phillies in the National League East. I think part of their problem is that Matt Olson is not producing. He's hitting only 159 in the last month. He's not hitting home runs. So my question is pretty simple. What's wrong with Matt Olson? Thanks.
No, it's really interesting, but if you look at the underlying metrics with Matt Olson, they're actually similar to what they were last year, like exit velocity, hard hit rate, that sort of thing. So I don't mean to sound like 40 games, a quarter of the season doesn't mean that much, but I do feel like you will see a correction with Matt Olson at some point, because the underlying numbers suggest that, you know, at some point it's going to click in for him. But it is kind of amazing that the Braves are where they are, without really having had much production from Austin Riley or Ronald Acuna Jr. or Matt Olson?
Hey, guys. It's Matt from Toronto, now living in Washington, D.C. Love the pod. Thanks for all you do. Here's a question for you. What is the process like for deciding whether or not teams are placed in the AL or the NL? Like, what does that look like historically and going forward, whenever it is that we end up with new teams, whether it's Nashville or Portland or hopefully bringing back the Expos? Who decides which league those teams end up in? Thanks so much. Have a good one.
So Major League Baseball, the owners will have a committee, like an expansion committee, and then they'll study proposals that'll be forwarded by different groups from different cities. And then they'll have situations where actually they will mix and match. So they might say, well, we like this owner, but we like this team president, and we match those together. And yes, we've agreed to a sale price, that sort of thing. Yeah, for example, and it wasn't an expansion team, but, you know, Derek Jeter wanted to lead a team and he had some potential investors, and then they wound up matching him with Bruce Sherman, another owner. Same thing happened. You know, John Henry was actually an owner of the Marlins, and with the Red Sox up for sale, they kind of switched him over and they're like, well, you know, how about owning the Boston Red Sox instead? And then his share of the Marlins were sold to somebody else. But that's all sort of done within the private club of the 30 owners.
Hey, Buster, this is Josh Atkins from Columbus, Ohio. You were mentioning on your Monday podcast some notes about the ABS system. I've seen this used in the minor leagues, and it's really quick, very fast for them to overturn or confirm the call on the field. And also, my thoughts on it are, I think it could help the umpires be trained to find better zones. If they think a pitch is a strike and it's actually a ball and they get corrected within 3 seconds, I think they could actually get better at their jobs. All right, thanks.
I think it has actually helped them get better. You know, Jeff Passan had a great note in a column that came out last week about how the percentage of correct calls is gradually climbing, which doesn't surprise me, because the umpires are being graded more specifically with the help of the box. So, well, you know, at the end of the game, they get feedback and they're like, well, you were right on this percentage of, you know, this amount of the calls. And I think the, you know, just getting repeated, you know, attempts to do that with a very specific system, I think it makes sense that those numbers would go up. You know, the one thing that's I do always find interesting is that guess who's at the top of those lists, Taylor? It's always the younger umpires. Doesn't surprise me,
yeah.
Right? The younger umpires always seem to grade higher in the ball strike ratings.
Fresh eyeballs, I guess. All right, last voicemail, last question for the week.
Hey, guys, this is Landon from Atlanta. Buster, I believe the most influential injury to this point of the season was Wilson Contreras of the Cardinals. I believe that this puts them squarely in seller mode this summer. I was also wondering what kind of moves you think they can make to return to relevancy over the next year or so. I would say that they're going to make a change at manager, and also, who do you think would be a good fit for that? Maybe Albert Pujols or Yadier Molina or someone else. I would love to get your thoughts on the outlook of the Cardinals. Thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think part of the reason why the leadership of that team gave Ollie Marmol his extension was they wanted to avoid all that conversation about, you know, having a lame duck manager and whether or not Albert Pujols, Yadi Molina, Skip Schumacher might be a replacement at some point. But guess what? Because the team is playing poorly, all that speculation is still out there. Look, I think at some point, if they continue on this trajectory, then they will have some parts to be sold off. And I agree with you about Wilson Contreras's injury. He has been one of the most effective players for the Cardinals. He's improved his catching. They felt like he put in a lot of work. But, you know, unless Paul Goldschmidt, I think, picks it up and some of the younger players pick it up, it's going to be another long season for St. Louis.
Tyler O'Neill probably so happy he is not in the middle of that. Yikes. All right.
Yeah, they you know, I mean, again, I think I've mentioned this in the past. Tyler O'Neill, former Cardinal, right? Off to a great start. Mm-hmm. Randy Arozarena, Adolis Garcia. All from the Cardinals. It just feels like over and over and over again, they picked the wrong guy or something has gone on. And that would have to be something that internally the Cardinals have probably already talked about and they need to talk about more. why does this keep happening to them, where young players, young prospects don't seem to translate as well as they do with other teams?
Talent development, Buster. That is a key part of running a professional sports operation. So
Dodgers, right. And the Dodgers at the other end of the spectrum, they're really good at developing players.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Landon. Thanks for calling in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets, the number, the email address. It's all in the show notes. Shout out to Scott Durbin, Reds fan. Sorry about Christian Encarnacion Strand. That's a tough one. Thanks for reaching out. We'll be back on Monday morning.
That's it for today. That's it for this week. My thanks today to Todd Radom, to Sarah Langs, Eduardo Perez, Taylor Schwenk. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.